Hello and welcome to Think Rant. Today's 5th of May 2011. I'm John Stable, your host, and with me as usual is Stephen Brett.
Good evening.
And Trevor Williams.
Hello.
And this week we're joined by a special guest. Last year he received the Grassroots JREF Award for Outstanding Contribution to Skepticism, along with Ben Goldacre, who won the professional category. He's responsible for the expose of the now infamous Bleachgate, has featured heavily in the media promoting grassroots scepticism, and continues to be a significant thorn in the side of homeopaths and other purveyors of woo. He is, of course, Rhys Morgan. Hello.
Hello. Hey. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much for joining us. Before we get into the show, I just thought I'd get the first question into you, if that's okay.
Yeah.
I wanted to know, since obviously Bleachgate's happened, you become a bit of a kind of celebrity within skepticism. I was just wondering, have you ever been back to those forums to find out, you know, about the fallout of the whole thing?
Well, as it turns out, I've been, I have gone on there occasionally just to read it, but soon after the video, as in like the next morning, after the original video that started it all, I received an email from the moderator who banned me. They posted a rather long email to me saying, "Well, you know, I thought this would be a nice time for you to time out. You could have 10-14 days away from the forum and come back a much better character who's much more willing to take part in the community." But you had to go and make this video about us. And so now we're permanently banning you. So I was permanently banned from the forum. So, yes, I have gone and visited the forum just to read things occasionally, see how they're getting on. But, no, I was permanently banned from the forum. I have noticed that they did a bit more with the MMS story, because they started their own sub-forum about it, which they'd put the MMS posts into. Then they deleted that, and then they started a wiki, which has a page on Miracle Mineral Solution. It's strange because it's, you know, the BBC sometimes get mixed up with Balance, and they have the Balance fallacy where they give both sides equal time, not realising that actually one side is based on evidence. Well, that's basically what they do on Crohn's Forum. I could probably pull it up now. It's quite mad. They're like, "Oh yes, well, some people have said that it's bad and that there's no evidence for it, but then others have said that it's good and have cited this one piece of evidence saying that chlorine dioxide is safe to take, as if that's, you know, good enough evidence." So, okay. Who knows? I don't know exactly how many people are still using Miracle Mineral Solution on the forum, but it seems like the main promoter is still quite big on the forum. He still seems to be quite popular. So,
indeed. So, but you got to go and collect the JREF award, and you got to meet James Randi. How cool was that?
It was awesome. And amazingly, I was taller than him.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yes, which it's unusual for me to be taller than anyone at the moment because I've started to grow now, but because when I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease, I hadn't been growing for ages. I was then taller than James Randi.
And just think, you're probably taller than Tom Cruise as well, so you got that as well.
Possibly, who knows?
Yeah, and he got Katie Holmes, so...
Yeah, that was a conspiracy by the Church of Scientology.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because actually Tom Cruise is gay. Apparently.
All right.
Thanks for the apparently, Steve.
Apparently. So the rumour goes.
The apparently is what allows us to not be sued for libel, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, what's happened is Steve decided his life is really boring and he wants to make the news, so he's just trying to libel everybody.
Yeah, that's a good plan.
Piss off a Scientologist. What a great idea. You've got too many hours in your week.
Have you met John Dixon?
Yeah, oh, well, God, you know, yeah. He's inspiration to me.
Oh, right. Okay.
Fair enough.
Trev, have you got any questions?
Peace of mind is boredom. but yeah, actually, I'm growing right now, actually. No.
Oh, come on, Trev.
That was earlier. I was looking at something on the computer. Actually, I had a similar thing of... I hardly grew at all at the ages of 14 and 15, but because I was undiagnosed diabetic, and then they put me on the insulin, and I expanded hugely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have stretch marks on me.
On to talk of growth stories, I didn't grow until I was 19, 20 either. But that's because I had a hormone deficiency.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when we say grow, we're talking about height now, Steve. Yeah.
Yes, yes, I'm talking about as well. The girth grew... It's not the mouth that comes out of, it's the mind it goes into. I meant the size of my gut, which is considerable, started to grow after I left university, particularly. So, yes. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
You know what? I was really hoping that we could actually get to the 10-minute mark before anything like that happened, you know.
How far did we get?
3 minutes and 55 seconds.
Boom. Yeah.
So. Okay.
Oh, yeah. So, one of the things I wanted to say was I was thinking about all the various podcasts you've been on and how we should probably be really ashamed because you've been on, like, Righteous Indignation. And... we've met Hayley Stevens, who's on that, and you've been featured on the Pod Delusion, and Dean Burnett contributes to that, and I've met him. You've been on Skeptic's Guide to the Universe.
Yes.
Yeah. Now hang on a second. Hang on.
They're American. I haven't met them.
Yeah, but, and I just wanted to make out as well before you continue that we're not going to be condescending like them, telling you why aren't you in bed. So you know.
Well, it's not quite 1 a.m. yet, so.
No.
I think 1 a.m. was when I started recording that Skeptic's Guide to the Universe episode.
But what we will say is, why aren't you revising? Because you've got exams in a couple of weeks' time.
I was revising.
And we interrupted you.
Yeah, it's your fault.
Sorry. You know, these exams are the most important things coming up for you now, Reese. You've got to take them seriously, you know. Otherwise, you'll end up like me.
Were you going somewhere, Trev?
I was going to surprise you with, I haven't actually met James Randi, but I've met somebody who's met somebody. I've met someone who has met James Randi.
All right.
It's you, though.
Oh, right. Okay.
Sorry, I thought you were going to say Uri Geller or something.
Nah, nah. So basically, that's it. You're our skeptical claim to fame, really.
Woo!
Have we met Noodle Maz that you do super duper writing duo with Capes with? Because... I don't know what her secret identity is, but like, she come to the Cardiff Skeptics in the pub?
No, she's London-based. Yeah.
Crikey.
Yes. Right. Yeah, you can follow her on Twitter, at NoodleMaz.
Righto. Cool.
Yes.
Whoring out Twitter accounts.
I've not even thought up my own yet.
Oh, we'll save that for later.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, you said for later.
Oh my god!
Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh.
Trev, have you taken your insulin tonight?
But yeah, I refuse to answer on the grounds that I'll be incinerated. The thing is,
like a companion cube. You thought it was a joke.
Yeah, you've been on all these other podcasts. Were they really professional affairs, or were they kind of like this? Only they edited all of the nonsense out.
They were basically like this, yes. Except they weren't live.
Right, so that's clearly where we're going wrong.
We're cutting edge, that's it.
Yes, exactly. And this is more relaxed as well than some of the others. But then that might just be because I've got a bit more experience now.
And it's also because I'm drinking.
We're going to take that as a compliment.
That's a good thing. Yes, it is a good thing.
Cool. Right, did everybody see... the Simon Singh documentary on the other night?
Unfortunately not, no.
No, I missed it.
No, I missed it as well.
Right, well, that's one less thing to talk about. There's me worried that we wouldn't get all of the news in.
Did you watch it, John?
Well, you know, I was only going to say, did you watch it and did you have anything to say about it? I mean, you didn't see Simon Singh when you came to Cardiff, did you?
No, I did, but I know a bit about his story, so...
So, you know, but we've got nothing extra to say about that. So we can move swiftly on to a news story. Now, I forgot to ask Reese earlier. Did you have anything you wanted to talk about in particular? Don't worry if you don't, because neither does Steve.
but I never do.
Well, yes, actually, I was possibly going to hopefully start a discussion about conspiracy theories, particularly the 9/11 and the most recent one, the Osama conspiracy theory.
Oh, is this the one where people think that Sam has been dead for ages and they've only now released it to improve Obama's standings in the polls or something?
Or the one that he's not actually dead?
Obama's not dead. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Those two.
I've got a T-shirt with Osama's not dead on it. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, I mean, by burying him at sea, I mean, that's fodder for all conspiracy theorists.
And, yes, it is.
But unfortunately, the reason behind doing it has been so that there's not going to be a shrine, which I think is perhaps a valid reason.
And also because in Islam, they have to be buried within 24 hours, I think.
Unless there is a legal requirement for an autopsy, in which case they can go longer, which, according to the US, you know, there wasn't no need for an autopsy because they could tell he got shot by a bullet in the head. So, you know.
Two, wasn't it?
I think it was a double tap. One in the head, one in the heart, probably.
One in the belly or something.
Just to make sure he's down.
Because the thing is, if there's only one bullet wound, they could have said, well, it might have been deli belly. You know, you can't be sure which got him first, but then the two kind of sealed the deal.
Yeah. So, I don't think there was a need for an autopsy. So, yes, there was a need for him to be buried quickly, and according to US officials, and, you know, I have no reason to disbelieve them, to be honest with you. They, accorded him all the correct rights as should be befitting a devout Muslim. So, you know, I don't have an issue with him being buried quickly or being buried at sea. I mean, I take you know, the point on board that for conspiracy theorists, I mean, it's just like a wet dream, isn't it? You know, it's it's just amazing. You know, they've got this. Yes, there's no body, therefore he must be alive. Mm. You know, it's
Well, the thing is, I mean, if you're a true nut, surely you believe that, you know, he actually got raptured.
Yes, John. Anyway,
we're talking about
the wrong room to do that.
I know. I'm obviously playing to the wrong audience tonight. That was like my maths joke that I did off air that nobody got.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. So, but I want to, and Reese mentioned the 9/11 conspiracies, and I thought it was quite interesting how a lot of the mindset of the conspiracy theorist is quite similar to those purveyors of woo.
Yes, indeed. I did notice that. I think what sparked this is Ashley Price of he's a Scottish skeptic, or he's I think he does the Edinburgh Skeptics. He put this on his Facebook wall. So the US government is powerful enough to convince its almost entire population, press of the world, Al-Qaeda and Pakistan that Osama is dead, but they overlooked a glaring plot hole like the sea burial. Seriously? For most conspiracy theories to be true, the US has to be both the most intelligent and simultaneously the most inept organisation ever to overlook such obvious holes. The same can be said for every other conspiracy theory. The government is so powerful and clever that a bloke in his room with Google can crack it. And so I made a note of this and put it on my Facebook. And this sparked a rather interesting conversation with one of my friends.
Yeah, and I don't know if you want to identify him on a podcast.
Probably best not to. You know,
just probably not, you know.
In terms of fairness, because he's not here to respond himself.
No, I mean, I know the girls allowed listen to the podcast.
Absolutely,
but, you know, I don't know who else does, you know. So
Cheryl and I, you know, we tune in.
Do the three of us grown blokes really want to be named in a cyberbullying child scandal?
No.
You'll see
it
on the front of the Daily Mail now.
Can you imagine?
So, yeah, there was a little bit of a standoff with you, Reese, and your friend, who didn't seem to know what evidence really meant, apart from
YouTube videos. I can answer that for you. Oh, you took the words out of my mouth, I can answer that for you. Evidence, obviously, is YouTube videos, do you know what I mean? You can go onto YouTube, you can find evidence for anything that you want. And it is evidence, you know, it's there, it's on the internet, it's in the public domain, it must be evidence, it must be true.
You did make that point, didn't you, Reese, that, you know, YouTube could be used as evidence for anything. So,
That was one of the main. I think I find it quite funny, but also quite sad at the same time, because we were talking about eyewitness accounts and how they're not entirely reliable, and we gave him examples of actual things that could. That they could actually have been, because I think he said 100 eyewitnesses had seen this one. Saw and heard the same thing. It's not going to be otherwise. Stop being illogical and childish. And I think Jonathan made the point. He said, because eyewitness accounts are so reliable, that must mean God, angels, demons, aliens, ghosts, Mothman, the Loch Ness Monster, fairies, Santa Claus, and Zombie Elvis all exist. Which I thought was a rather good point.
Hang on, sorry. Zombie Elvis doesn't exist?
Yeah, in real world, not in, you know, your imagination.
I've seen him. He was serving chips in Brinner Chippy last week.
Eyewitness account. There we go. Sorry.
it must be true, see?
The best one is when you say to him, yeah, I will have salt and vinegar, and he goes, uh-huh.
Exactly. You've seen him too. no, it's incredible. I mean, I followed the conversation I picked up of John's Facebook thread and sort of went back to the origination and found it there. And, you know, the fact that, yes, eyewitness evidence is useful, but, you know, even the police in criminal trials can't rely solely on...
And it is treated as such. It's
testimony, because,
as
you know, people see different things. People hear different things, and they hear things in... They remember things in different orders as well. You know, well, especially when it's a traumatic an event on the scale of the destruction of the World Trade Center. So, you know, people will make mistakes. I think that's a human reaction to the stress of the time. So,
And try of course,
and suggest that it's 100% reliable is ridiculous.
And of course, people can have false memories as well.
Absolutely. Particularly having, you know, seen all the footage and heard all the footage since the event, that's going to have coloured their opinion of it somewhat, because it'll fill in the little gaps and blanks which are in their mind.
Exactly. But I think the strangest thing that he said was, we asked him for evidence, and he said, I gave you evidence, you're not doing research yourself. And then... Jonathan said, "So sorry, was your evidence a YouTube video?" And he said, "Sorry, I didn't put the other one here and post another link to a YouTube video." And John said, "Is watching YouTube videos now classed as research?" And to which he responded, "Yes, looking up anything is research, and finding out what's fact and fiction is research. That last video, I believe to be fact." Emphasis on believe. The best source with video evidence is YouTube. I don't know what you're scoffing at, but I actually see the symmetrical collapse.
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't want to talk about the details of the conspiracy, you know, about the collapse of the World Trade Center and how it looks like, because it's all been debunked.
Yeah, exactly.
On many a different skeptic sites, and, you know...
So do you mean to tell me that videos can't be faked?
Well, I wouldn't mind, but the original, I can't remember who did it, the username of the person, but the person who actually did the original 9/11 conspiracy theory video was, you know, interviewed about it afterwards. And, you know, he freely admits he edited the entire video to not have certain evidence. One of them was was where the plane went into the Pentagon. The video showed, you know, wheels from the aircraft and all different debris. He just showed the one part of the video where you couldn't see any aircraft debris, and then put up a thing saying, where's all the aircraft? It must have been a Tomahawk missile. And, you know, it was almost Poe. But, you know. But people lapped it up.
But then, you know, I think there is a... you know, there's a lot of gullible people out there, aren't there, really, basically. I think, you know, it's people... at least, like, people who believe... Da Vinci Code is absolute fact because Dan Brown wrote at the start of the book, despite the fact this is a work of fiction, these are facts. So therefore, the book must be fact.
Yeah,
you know, it's.
I had one friend when I was back in year six, and I will admit at this time that I used to be a Christian, and this friend was an atheist. And except he was a rather strange person. I looking back, I would say that even. And he wanted to set up the Church of Atheism, and then when somehow the discussion turned to Dan Brown's novel, and he was like, "Oh, that's like the Bible for atheists now, isn't it?"
I've heard that as well, not just from year six students. Do you know what I mean? I've heard that. From adults who, you know, have got more life experience than that, then, you know, and that's not to be in any way condescending or patronizing, but, you know, you've got grown adults who are propagating exactly the same sort of thing that, wow, the Da Vinci Code blew me away because I never knew the church was really that corrupt.
Well, I mean, it is, just not that.
Yeah. Trev, you've been quiet.
Excuse me.
Well, I was about to chip in, but then you said something about the church being corrupt. And I thought, if I start, you'll just never be able to shut me up.
Okay. All right. Well,
but yeah, I remember with all the recent stuff about Osama, are we all familiar with the picture of the White House staff watching the footage?
Yes.
With John Lithgow from Third Rock. In the...
Right. Yeah, and Hillary's got a hand over her mouth. She's all aghast. And everybody's very serious looking. And then they said, but... what was it? First of all, they said, that's them looking at Osama's dead body. And then they corrected themselves and said, no, they're not looking at Osama's dead body. Mm. And people started saying, oh my God, what were they looking at? Were they watching like a film? Were they watching Thor? It's not out yet. What's going on?
But Fox News said they were looking at Obama's dead body.
Well, I thought it might be Oval Office footage of Bill Clinton with an intern from a couple of years ago.
Oh.
Because that would definitely make Hillary put her hand over her mouth.
Yeah, that would explain the Hillary thing.
Yeah, but no,
and
it
Obama
just turned
looking
out
stern.
But the on it, posted
just
on,
distant footage or something.
Yeah, posted on Facebook, there was like 40 of the most stupid Facebook status updates to do with Osama's death.
Mm.
And half of them were to do with they believing that Obama had died, had been killed, and they were all celebrating the fact. And I was like, "These are Americans."
But that's because Fox News told the world that Obama was dead, not once but twice on two of their different affiliate stations. The one had it scrolling across the bottom, "Obama is dead," and the other one, which was priceless, was they just showed the president making the announcement, and as he's walking away, the commentator goes, "So there was President Obama." Informing us that President Obama is dead. Those were the actual words
Zombie
used.
Zombie action.
Yo,
do you need any more evidence?
You've got a zombie president.
Fox News is terrible.
Hey, Sky News did the same thing. A bunch of different reporters said Obama. But at least in this country, they said Obama. I'm sorry, Osama. And then corrected themselves. It took until they had an American correspondent on to just carry on calling Osama bin Laden Obama over and over again.
Oh.
I think Dermot Murnaghan was stifling a giggle through the whole thing.
Hmm.
Well, it was supposed to be very serious television, obviously.
Clearly.
The news. Can't get more serious than that, of course. That's what we do every week. I'm going to take this natural lull in the conversation to present our regular feature.
Yeah!
Are you ready for this? Of course, Reese isn't because he's never listened to the podcast before. However, we will fill him in and we will...
Have you got a jingle?
No, we don't have a jingle still. We need somebody who can maybe play the guitar and do a riff or something. I don't know. Okay.
2 seconds.
No.
Brilliant.
This isn't some spotlight, you know, where you can show your other talents to the world.
It's not Britain's Got Talent, you know.
No. Apparently the voting system on that's too hard.
Apparently so, yeah.
Yes.
But we'll talk about that after, I'm sure.
That is AV.
Okay, so this is called Guess the Year, and our regular listeners... and Girls Aloud will know, okay, that what happens in this is I've picked a year, which I've researched thoroughly to get interesting facts about. I will then read
on to Wikipedia.
Wikipedia, yeah, you're right. And then I will read out these facts one at a time. If you think you know the year, you call out your name, for instance.
Okay.
Steve.
Dave.
Bit of professionalism, please, guys. Okay, no. Who cares? It's all gone to pot, hasn't it?
It does every week, John.
Okay, so I'll say a fact. You know, I'll pause in between. If someone knows, call out your name, say the year. If you get the year wrong, you're locked out for the next clue to stop everyone just shouting out random years, okay? No internet use, okay? Now, I can see Stephen is being honest because there's nothing in front of him. Not even his iPhone. I got to trust Trev, unfortunately, and I guess I'm going to have to trust you as well, Reese.
I think Trev's too busy looking at filth anyway, so...
Yeah, that's right.
His computer's too laden with adware to.
I should be the best at this because, although I've done no research whatsoever, I have the added advantage of just being older than everybody else, so I should remember more years.
And what is the score, Steve, at the moment?
I believe the score, John, at the moment is 2-0 to me, actually.
Okay, so it's 2-0 to Steve. Now, obviously, the only thing you're going to get, Reese, is bragging rights. I also usually say I'll buy the person a pint next time I see him. I suppose for you that'll be, you know,
if you want to wait a couple of years.
Well,
you
you can either wait a couple of years or you can just have like a Coke or something off me when I see you at Skeptics in the Pub. Okay. Cool. Are you any good at history, Reese?
No, I've not taken it for GCSE.
Okay. Well, I've been kind, okay, and I've actually picked a more recent year because I've done the 50s and the 70s previously.
Steve, 1992.
No, it's not that. You got to wait
you're
for the
next one. Excellent.
I'm afraid, although the comedy is good, I am going to be strict and lock you out with this clip.
Damn you!
Okay, so let's get on with this. Okay, guess the year. Insert jingle here. Thanks, that's what I did the first time. January the 17th. British Telecom announces it is going to phase out its famous red telephone boxes. No?
No idea.
I'll continue.
Back in the game.
There's no specific date for this one, but it was in this year that DNA was first used in a criminal case.
Steve, 1988.
You're wrong. You're locked out of the next one.
Shucks.
Next clue, October the 10th, Orson Welles dies.
Trev, 1986?
No, I'm sorry, you're locked out as well.
Got it.
February the 20th, Minolta releases the world's first autofocus single lens reflex camera. I know
you
that one's a bit random.
Single...
I was trying to give Steve a clip. Like, he's into his photography, so I thought, you know.
Yeah.
November the
20th. Bias. That's bias. I'm calling bias.
Yeah, but I didn't have a clue. So
didn't, yeah, that's only joking. He just likes to use his camera. He doesn't know anything about it.
This is very true.
November the 20th, Microsoft releases the first version of Windows. Windows 1.0.
Steve?
Yeah?
1987?
No, I'm sorry, you're locked out.
Reese.
Go on.
1985?
He's right! He's got it.
Yes!
Was that a guess, or have you been cheating?
No, I've not been cheating. No, I just know that it was after Apple announced the Mac, which is in 1984.
Educated guess, we'll call that.
Yeah, why not?
Well done, Reese.
Thank you.
Sorry, Trev, that means that you're still on zero.
That was so close. Oh, got it.
Yeah.
I'm not actually crying. I'm all right. I'm not.
You can always just blame
Sorry,
Reece.
Trev. Sorry.
It's,
always,
okay. You know, it's okay. It's fine.
What other interesting factoids do we have in 1985 then?
Oh, hang on. Yeah, I'll give you the rest of, you know, what I think is interesting, just in case you care. Commodore Amiga was launched. Coca-Cola changes its formula. To New Coke.
Oh, was that New Coke?
It was, which only went for 3 months and then they cancelled it. George H.W. Bush served as president for 8 hours while Ronald Reagan had some surgery. And the one I thought was going to give it away, it's the last clue, was Back to the Future opens in American theatres.
Oh, yeah, that would have done it.
That would have given it away. Absolutely, yeah. Because we all love that film, don't we?
And TV2 November 5th, 1985.
Yeah. So, there you go. Thanks very much for playing, guys. You were good sports. And it was very nice of you to let Reese win.
Yeah, okay. I'll take that.
You'll go for that, I thought so.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Okay, I'm going to now go to Trevor. Because I'm sure he's got something he wants to talk
I have.
About.
Well, because you've provided some format and some structure to this thing, I thought I'd try and pull my weight a little bit. And I was wondering what kind of segment could I provide?
Ooh.
And seeing as on almost every one that I've been on, I've managed to come up with a Catholic story. I was thinking we could do something like, "Has Trev got a Catholic story this week?" can you guys sing that in?
So hang on. Your regular feature is going to be a story about Catholicism.
Well, like, they're not going to feed me.
Catholicism, wow.
Come on.
Okay. Can you sing? Can you sing?
I can't sing, no.
No, okay. Can you sing, Reese? Come on, you can do it.
Oh, God. Has Trev got a Catholic story this week?
No, actually. That's a bit of a shame. There wasn't a very good one. So, I come up with some other ideas, right? We could do a thing every week of presenting an award to some person in the media who deserves it. And I thought we could give Think Rant Stink Hands or Shit Throwing Gobshite on an award for foul, hurtful, or stupid behaviour.
All right, so this isn't awards for people we like, it's for people we dislike.
It's going to go Little John every week.
Well, potential recipients for the Shit Throwing Gobshite might be Pastor Terry Jones, for instance, or David Cameron, or Glenn Beck, or Pope Benedict.
Oh, do we get to vote on them?
Well, it's a tile, and you could choose one.
Okay, but cool.
Another
are we going to use first past the post or alternative votes?
I think it should be AV.
I'll give you guys the titles, and if you come up with a story and you think you found them, then go for it. And then if we end up with some competing ones, then we'd have to go for a vote.
Okay.
The next idea is Think Rant Thing Glands or Pencil Dick of the Week. An award for the most arrogant, obnoxious, conceited quote or action of the week.
Again, Little John is there again.
Yeah.
And homeopathic Dana, I'd say. Dana Ullman. Yeah.
That's right. Remember, accusation of pencil dick can be just as hurtful for a woman. And the potential recipients of that could be like George Osborne, Anne Widdecombe, Piers Morgan, Pope Benedict XVI. but this week, the story I've got is for Think Rants, Think Stance, or Unacceptable Weasel Move of the Week. An award for clear hypocrisy or obstinate misconduct in the face of obvious truth or morality. And these kind of people would be...
That's
Nick
anyone
Clegg
in the No campaign.
Dick, I'm sorry, Nick Griffin. Pope Benedict the 16th, obviously. But no, it's a truly shocking story, actually. The people who get the Fink stance would be the United States Supreme Court this week. I don't know if you guys have heard of this, but it's an appalling story. It was in this Wednesday's Independent. A cheerleader must compensate the school that told her to clap her rapist.
What?
A teenage girl was dropped from her high school's cheerleading squad after refusing to chant the name of a basketball player who had sexually assaulted her. And she must pay compensation of $45,000 after losing a legal challenge. The United States Supreme Court on Monday declined to hear a review of that case. When she was 16, she said she had been raped at a house party attended by dozens of fellow students in southeast Texas. And one of her alleged assailants, a student athlete called Rakeem Bolton, was arrested with two other young men. In court, Bolton pleaded guilty to the misdemeanor assault. He received 2 years probation, community service, and a fine, and was required to take anger management classes. And the charge of rape was dropped. But I had a look today on Tinternet, and the age of consent in Texas is 70, so it's statutory rape. And the only way that you can drop that is if, it is an affirmative defense to prosecution if the alleged rapist was A, no more than 3 years older, check, yes he was, B, of the opposite sex, check, but they're showing their true Texan bigotry there, and D, not a registered sex offender. Check. So they could drop the rape charge. But wait, I didn't say a C, did I? There was a third mandatory stipulation, and that's that he didn't use duress, force, or a threat against the victim. And they admitted in court that they had held her down and raped her. But the guy was on their basketball team, and that was of higher importance. So the guy was let back into school, and 4 months later, she was a cheerleader and was forced to cheer for him. When she said no, she was sacked from the cheerleading squad.
So why is she, was she having to pay compensation to whom for?
Well, she thought, quite reasonably, that she wanted to be a cheerleader, but should have the option of not cheering for the guy who it was proved in court raped her.
Who admitted to it as well, yeah?
Yeah.
Let's be clear about that.
Yeah. But the coach said that she had to, and when she didn't, she was dropped from the squad. And these kind of things can be very important in America for an extracurricular things, for getting into colleges and stuff. So they decided to sue so that she could get back on. And everything failed, and even the Supreme Court decided that it wasn't worth their while.
Well, that's pretty shocking, to be honest. I mean,
I don't actually know what to say to that, because it's
stunning, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it was in Wednesday's Independent, on the same page as an advert from UNICEF reminding us of the institutionalized child abuse of child marriages in the Third World. I'm sure UNICEF had no idea a similar state-sanctioned child abuse would be advertised from America.
Yeah. That is
particularly. And I almost missed it in the newspaper. It wasn't. I would have thought that would be near the front page. That's appalling. I know we have a special relationship with America, but my God.
But it's amazing how much, and it kind of plays through in their culture as well, how much importance they actually do put into like things like their basketball
athletes
and their, you know, their football squads, that they can actually be almost untouchable, as if they were some kind of politician or something, that they can get away with.
I think
they're
better protected than politicians, to be honest with you.
But it was quite interesting that apparently does that mean that you could get away with statutory rape if you were a lesbian or something like that? Is that what their law basically says?
No, it says that you have to be of the opposite sex to have a chance of getting away with it. Let's say a boy who was 16, for instance, and a girl who was 17. Don't get excited, Reese. This is entirely hypothetical. Okay?
It's a thought experiment. Yeah. But don't think about it too much.
The girl is of age, in the example, although the girl is of age and the boy isn't, as long as he's up for it, and she isn't 3 years older, she is of the opposite sex, then the prosecution services wouldn't proceed with it.
Ah, so therefore you're saying if it was a gay rape, they would definitely be done. There's no way out of it for them.
Yeah, that's right. Even if the underage participant wanted to say, I wanted it and it's all great and we're in a relationship and everything's lovely, the courts would be unable to drop it.
Yeah, but they'd both get prosecuted then, though, wouldn't they, probably?
Oh, it's hard to know what they do, because what they say and what they do appears to be very, very different.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that kind of just brings me on to another thing as well. Really, I've been very frustrated this week with America.
Cheryl Cole not been returning your calls.
Cheryl Cole's not been returning my calls after Trev's comments last week. It's just been more about, you know, how America seems to pick and choose what's law and what's not, and, you know, what is right and what's wrong.
Oh, you know? Tell us more, Steve.
Well, you know, as long as Trev's happy to move on. I mean, because like I say, I'm just absolutely stunned by that story, Trev. I can't... Actually, it's absolute nonsense, isn't it?
That's not a fun story to dwell on.
No.
It is shocking.
So, yeah, I mean, I just kind of wanted to go back to one of our earlier stories before the little game which Reese won, damn you. And talk about the death of Osama bin Laden. Now, whilst I don't particularly shed a tear for Osama bin Laden, what I do shed a tear for is the death of law and justice, because you know, in complete violation of international law, America has sent a hit team to go and assassinate Osama bin Laden when he could have been caught and tried. Now, you know, whilst America would agree that this is a breach of law, they've still yet ahead carried on and done this. And it's amazing how they can pick and choose what's right when they keep telling us that they have the moral high ground and that, you know, they are right and that they want, you know, the rest of the world to live in the American way. Just smacks of hypocrisy to me.
Well, hypocrisy is the American way, and that is how most of the world lives.
This is true. I mean, I saw a lot of sentiment in the media, you know, people partying because he was dead. Now, I can understand people feeling, especially under the influence of the media, feeling relief somehow that, you know, this might reduce the terrorist threat, whereas in reality it might actually increase it. But I don't know if it really warrants a, you know, a kind of royal wedding street party kind of thing. Really?
No, absolutely not. And, you know, this for me is the thing. There's two things that have come out of this, and that is just the Americans' flagrant disregard for the law, and their law at that as well, the law which they esteem so highly, yet they can just disregard whenever the hell they feel like it. And the second part being the absolute disgraceful and disgusting scenes of celebration over Bin Laden's murder. You know, it's absolutely terrible. I think John commented on one social media network that it was reminiscent of the type of events that happen in the Middle East and in Palestine.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you see,
following you know, the death of an American serviceman, we see all the flags burning and the out and out joy. There is no difference between the two, and yet, you know, the America in particular are very quick to condemn those gatherings. Yet they're just as guilty of it as we've seen the evidence of this week.
Oh, well, I think that's two stories we all agree. You know, it has been pretty rubbish week, to be honest.
There's something even more controversial.
Okay.
Are you ready? I couldn't disagree with this story more fervently. Apparently, Emma Watson tops the poll for being best dressed. I couldn't disagree with that more. Anne Widdecombe is best dressed. For Miss Watson, clothing is surely no more than optional. Surely.
You know, I mean, you've said it at the right time because you may have fallen foul of some law previously.
I know.
She's no longer jailbait.
But has she not gone off the rails slightly in so much that her haircut does? Why are we doing popular culture? What the hell is going on?
I have actually got no idea what you're talking about. To be honest with you, it's
Hermione.
Hermione, yeah, he knows what it is. He's basically saying this is too lowbrow, even for Steve. And trust me, his eyebrows are low.
Sorry. Although the fact that she's turned into such a hottie is making the early Harry Potter films very tricky to watch. Oh, it's so uncomfortable.
Tricky, you know, reaching for that Kleenex.
No, you're sick, man. sick, man.
Based on what you said earlier, you can't exactly say much.
Whoa! All right, no, we'll steer clear of anything I might have said off air. So anyway, what did you have? You got some problem with her fashion. I didn't realize this kind of thing.
No, I think the gag was that she's best undressed, whereas Anne Widdecombe is dressed. Okay, I think was the gag.
Most dressed, maybe. Thank God she's most dressed.
Thank God she's dressed. Just leave it at that. I think, to be honest with you, from talking about Anne Widdecombe.
Thank you for that, Steve, because the jokes are always much better when they have to explain.
Exactly. I Trev, I got it straight away, Charmy. I'm with you.
You did. You were there.
I'm there. I got your back.
Cheers, my brother.
Okay, thanks. You know, I segue slightly off. And okay, so we've got 16 minutes to go.
Well, we've got to talk about alternative voting, haven't we? We've got to do it.
We've held off until now.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now
it's everyone's favourite little story at the moment. Well,
now it's really weird though. No, go on, Trent.
When everybody listens to this, they'll probably already know.
Mm.
But
yes,
we're recording this in this little bubble of happy ignorance. We don't yet know that the country has thrown away its one chance in a generation to make politics fair
or fairer.
Ah, yeah.
Okay. No, you're right. And for some reason, I think when the Lib Dems got in, and you know, there was this, you know, this promise of a referendum on AV, I had this really positive outlook, and I thought surely the British public are going to go for that, and that is just going to make things so much better. You know, such a small change. I know it's not perfect. We've all said that along. It's not perfect. But it would make things so much better compared to the current system. And what can you believe it, that the opinion polls, which haven't always been 100% accurate, I'm aware. You know, I still have a tiny bit of hope. But really, is this country about to throw everything away over lies? And they are big, fat whoppers, you know.
They've admitted now, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they can admit it today, can't they? They've spent the last 4 months telling us that it's fact. So actually, it's already ingrained in the conscience of the British public who choose to buy right-wing rags such as The Sun and The Daily Mail and choose to accept their word as law. And, I mean, even today, The Sun's editorial piece was frankly disgusting and full of downright lies. And it really, frankly, pisses me off that they can get away with it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You can't report them to the Advertising Standards Authority for any, you know, the No to AV leaflets. You're not allowed to send them to the ASA because they're a political leaflet and the ASA aren't allowed to go, you know, rule against something like that, which is really annoying.
That sounds like something that needs to be a law that needs to be changed straight away. I mean, how anyone can justify that kind of...
It's a downright lies, and the fact that they've said no, they're not lies, but you know, today you can say actually we might have told you a little fib. It's absurd. It's absolutely absurd that they are having a referendum based upon lies. Now, don't get me wrong, you know, I think the Yes campaign could have been far better in its tactics of promoting AV as an option, but you know it.
Hasn't money played up an important part?
But what I was
going
to say, that
well,
the money which has come from the, you know, the right to support the No campaign has been phenomenal. You know, the amount of posters that I've seen, and we're talking the billboard posters around, which are from the No campaign compared to those of the Yes, you know, it's a massive difference. And unfortunately, money has won out on this occasion, and democracy hasn't. And democracy has failed and has been let down, and has been allowed to get away with it with just people telling barefaced lies. And if anybody tries to refute those lies, the right-wing rags step up and call them idiots and say that, you know, they're making things up.
Mm. And I think the biggest, the best thing that they've done from their point of view, the No campaign, is make it all about kicking Nick Clegg.
Yeah.
And...
Which is strange, considering, wasn't it Nick Clegg who convinced them to allow them to have the referendum? In the first place. And that's the one thing that I don't like that both sides have been doing. They've been playing off people's unpopularity as if that's an actual valid reason to vote. The No campaign have been pushing, oh yes, this will help the BNP, and they're not stating how, because the BNP will be everyone's... If people are going to vote for the BNP, they'll be their first preference, and then they'll get chucked out straight away. So there's no way that the BNP will get anything anything better. It's not going to help Nick Griffin. And then No campaign have also been using Nick Clegg as an example of someone who supports AV, and therefore you should vote for No to AV. But then the Yes campaign have also been guilty of the same thing. Now, I can understand why they've... you know, where they've said, yes, Nick Griffin doesn't want AV, but, you know, they've been doing similar things.
Yeah, that's actually true.
Nick Griffin does not want AV. That's because it wouldn't get him anywhere. But I just find it bad that they're playing off other people's opinions as if they're good reasons to vote for AV. It seems to be a popularity contest more than anything.
Yeah, and you've hit the nail on the head there. That's exactly what it is. You know, it's become rather than an electoral reform vote, it's become of who do you like more, David Cameron or Nick Clegg? You know, who do you want to see with egg on their face is effectively what the campaign has become. And, you know, I think the Yes campaign has tried to keep Nick Clegg out of it as much as possible to try and stop this from happening. Which is a shame because, you know, at the end of the day, whilst he may have made a few mistakes recently, I think Nick Clegg is probably a very good politician. But he jumped into bed with the Tories and, you know, that was his big mistake, really.
Sorry,
you've just said something about Nick Clegg and I don't know, it sounded like Trev dropped his microphone.
Yeah, I think Trev changed. he may have had a fit or something.
Trev, would you like to say something?
Oh, dear. No, it was just a twitch.
Whenever he says Nick Clegg's name.
Yeah, I know. He's the hate monkey for Liberal Democrats. He sold only a little bit of his soul to get to this position. You can't just sell a little bit of your soul, Nick. You sold it all. Bloody hell. But this is what he did it for.
I think he's talking about metaphorically.
Yes.
Oh, even I got that joke, Steve.
But yeah, this is what he did it all for. If it comes out as a no to AV vote tomorrow, then surely there's just going to be days left in this government.
Yeah. I mean, either way, it doesn't matter which way the vote goes. There's got to be only... It can't be much left in it.
Well, no, because the Tories, even if the vote goes yes, I mean, you know, it's not going to disadvantage the Tories.
Cameron. His party will eat him alive.
Well, no, I don't think they will. I don't think they will, because...
37-38% of the vote,
The Tories have got to say... I've got to say no to it because, you know, democracy goes against all their right-wing values. They've got to appeal to the, you know, majority of their party. So, you know, they're going to say that, but the people actually in charge are going to say, well, you know, it's AV. Actually, if we look historically at the recent elections that we've had, AV or not, wouldn't have really changed the outcome of the elections. So the Conservatives would still be in power. They're still having the boundary changes.
And that's the ultimate thing, and this is where Labour's dropped the ball, as I said.
And that's the biggest thing, is the boundary changes are happening, which is going to suit the Tories down to the ground. So, you know, people say that it's a myth that we're passing up a once-in-a-generation opportunity to reform the electoral system, but we really are, because once those boundaries are changed, we're just going to have to put up with the Tory government for the next however many years. Until there's a big enough knee-jerk reaction.
Like a potato famine or something.
To get rid of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't realise what we've sold to get here.
Yeah.
Like Reese's Future Education.
Yeah.
No, it's okay in Wales because as long as you've lived in Wales for five years, you get the £3,000. Although how long that'll last, especially with the new government coming in, how long that'll last is beyond me.
Yeah.
Oh, that is, if there is a new government coming in, but yeah. Because there's also the Welsh Assembly elections today, isn't there?
We'll have a whip round from the perp, you know, send Reece to uni.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I just wanted to say, you know, I thought Labour dropped the ball.
Yeah, I agree. They should put in when they had the majority.
You know, yeah, they should have. And they over the subject of AV this time round, they fractured. The dead wood that's still in the party has made it difficult. Ed Miliband hasn't been able to put himself forward straight away saying yes, vote yes.
Well, no, Ed has done that, in all fairness. Ed has said vote yes.
He did take his time.
No,
I don't think he took his time particularly. I mean, he was up on the stage saying yes, vote yes. The problem is you've got people like Beckett, you've got people like John Reid, who are complete has-beens politically and probably never was, jumping up saying, well, vote no to AV. I just think they don't understand what it is, to be honest with you.
And so the message to the Labour voters has been mixed.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
There's not going to be a strong, you know, and if they got that right, they would have had a chance next time round. But now, with the boundary changes, they're screwed.
They've completely dropped a bollock because, you know, boundary changes are coming in, plays into the Tory hands. The Tories are going to sit back laughing. Even with the change, even if AV was to be accepted, they're going to be loving it, whatever happens. So David Cameron's perfectly safe. And you know, they'll quite happily carry on with the coalition and, you know, keep on going because they've got nothing to worry about. You know, but you're quite right. If it fails, then the Lib Dems, their position, I imagine, with the Tories really becomes untenable.
And the grassroots will... Well, surely there's going to be a leadership contest.
Well, Chris Hoon's putting his name about, isn't he?
Yeah. So, okay.
A leadership contest which will be decided by AV, of course, exactly the same as the Conservative leadership, where, you know, we would have had David Davis as Prime Minister had we had First Past the Post instead of David Cameron. Because David Cameron was elected using AV and he was not the first choice.
Mm. And that's the irony of the whole thing.
It's smacks of hypocrisy. You know, AV is suitable for any election within the government, but it's not suitable to select a government because we're all too stupid to understand how to write 1, 2, 3, 4 on a piece of paper.
It's rather arrogant and condescending of the No campaign to be, oh, well, it's very complicated to do this. And have you seen that dreadful advert of in that school?
Yes.
Where they're, like, showing the 1, 2, and if you have to go second, and it means that a second or a third place person could get in. Well, no, because I think 95% of the time in Australia, it's the person who gets the most votes in the first round is 95% of the time they're the one who gets in anyway. Although one thing that I don't get with the data modelling for what would have happened had we had AV in past elections is we just don't know how those people would have put their second and third votes and how they would have voted had it not been tactical. So I don't think that the data modelling on past things, on past elections in the UK is very helpful because, you know, that's assuming a lot.
Well done, Reese. I've been yelling that at my TV for the last couple of weeks every time somebody has said that. Tactical voting. The primary vote is used in a completely different way.
Yeah, it's we just don't know how people would have voted, and more to the point, we don't know how they would have put their second, third, or fourth preferences. So you can't model on past elections because just because someone supports Labour doesn't mean that their second preference would have been the Lib Dems, definitely, or vice versa, for example. You just don't know that. So the data modelling, to me, it's not very
accurate.
It's not robust.
Accurate or benefit. No, exactly.
I mean, you can make models, but they're probably not going to be useful.
Well, I'd imagine they're probably basing it off the percentage share of the vote, aren't they? It's probably what they're doing, which you know, in AV terms, isn't exactly how it works.
No. Mm. So, honestly, I think a really good website that actually goes through lies on both sides of of the campaign is avlies.com. It's got, you know, it points out lots of the fallacies on both sides of the campaign, whether it be the AV will make MPs work harder. To an extent it will, but, you know...
It's not the silver bullet everyone thinks.
No, exactly. That's the thing. People seem to be portraying as either AV is ultimate reform and it's fantastic and it's all we need, or it's you know, it's just like a stepping stone, or it's like the worst thing ever. I just think it's not hugely better than first past the post, but it's a lot. It in the fact that it means that at least 50% of people will have to have voted for the candidate. That's the better side of it because you know that more people would have voted that person in. That's the good side of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree with you there, Reese. Because, I mean, for me, yeah, that's the advantage of AV. I mean, for me, I am one of these people who sees it as actually being a stepping stone. Because the way I look at it is that we haven't had electoral reform in this country for what? How long now? 300 years, something like that? I don't know.
I wasn't around at the time.
You know, yeah. before Trev's time as well, I think.
Actually, I remember it.
So, you know, the weight of history, then, I suppose, is against change. And if, as we suppose, a no vote is successful tonight, then it gives the naysayers all the ammunition that they need to say, well, look, we had a referendum, the people don't want to change. You know, we had a chance to change, to have a reform, and they don't want to change. So all these people who've today said, oh, I'm in favour of electoral reform, but I'm voted no because AV doesn't go far enough, have absolutely shot themselves in the foot. It's absolutely ridiculous, because what they've basically said is, well, actually, no, I don't give a shit about electoral reform, because now I've given a mandate to the No campaign to say for the next 50 years, well, we already had a referendum on it and people didn't want to change.
Mm-hmm. Also, but then there is, of course, the flip side of the coin. If we do get AV, and somehow the Conservatives are in, you know, majority next government or something like that, they may say, "Well, you've had all the electoral reform you need. Goodbye." But
absolutely. I mean, that could happen. But I think what you've got there is you've got a mindset has already changed in the British public, which is that electoral reform can happen. I think that's the important thing at the moment is, you know, we haven't had this opportunity, but actually now we've got the opportunity here that electoral reform can happen. And so it may, you know, if we have another Conservative government, it may not happen in the lifespan of that government. But I think, you know, the momentum is already there to move it on.
And also, if we've gone for electoral reform once, then the government will is more likely to listen to a grassroots campaign for further reform.
That's the thing. The Yes campaign seems to have been a lot more grassroots than the No campaign. And there seems to be quite a few, less of a conflict of interest there, I think, with the Yes campaign compared to the No campaign.
Because the no's basically just been Tories, hasn't it, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Okay, so,
can I just ask you, John?
Yeah?
Do you think that you'd be able to edit this one for when it goes out as a podcast? For if we're actually wrong and we do get a yes to AV, that you can make it look like we were smugly predicting that that was what was going to happen.
Yeah, what we'll do...
I was like, woo, yeah, AV is great. I'm so glad we've had it. And, you know, a real positive campaign, which has meant that, you know, we're in the driving seat to get this electoral reform happening. Yeah, brother, woo!
Yeah, I have every confidence in the British public. You can kind of weave that in, Kai.
Yeah, or I'll just, you know, maybe I'll just ask Reese if he minds popping on one night and we'll just re-record bits of it. It's not a problem.
Great.
But the people listening live will say, I knew it. I knew. They were all pessimists.
Theory.
Yeah, conspiracy theory. Well, I think...
I got to tell you one more thing.
Go on.
I lied. I do have a Catholic story.
Oh!
So I'll have to save it for next week. It's a good one.
Okay. Well, that's fair enough then. Okay, well, it's the end of the show. Don't all hang up at the end of it, because I need to speak to you, honestly. I'm going to close us out, if that's okay. I want to thank Reese, of course, for, you know, sparing his really valuable time when he should be revising.
Absolutely. These exams are the most important exams of your life, Reese, you know. It's no pressure.
You know, because
if you mess these up, oh, man.
Because if you don't get them, McDonald's just won't take you
off. Exactly, you'll never get to Fit Burgers.
So thank you very much, Reese. And I'd like to thank my good-looking co-host, Trev.
You mean the one you can't see? Cheers.
Yeah. I was just saying...
He was looking at me as you were saying it. I could see where he was going with
it. Yeah. So, sorry, the better looking. Sorry, I didn't mean the good looking, the better looking. And I'd like to thank Steve as well. So thanks very much, guys.
Thanks for that, John. I really appreciate your vote. Thanks. So, yeah, cheers.
Okay. Thanks to the live listeners especially, and also thanks to anyone who can be bothered to download us on iTunes. As usual, we forgot to mention the web addresses, Steve, which you're now going to tell us. No, he's not. Trev,
I have no idea what the web address is.
Obviously, it's you know, Twitter is @ThinkRant, which you of course know. But you've got a Facebook page as well, and our
also,
blog page is it
thinkrant.blogspot.com.
Boom! There we go. So
ask them to leave a review on iTunes and that kind of deal.
Like the SGU do, yeah, they're professional and they still beg people for reviews, so it's obviously not beneath us in any
way. Right.
So yeah, leave us some reviews on iTunes. I'm sure Reese will do it, because you know, because if it wasn't for this podcast, you wouldn't have been able to stay up late.
Absolutely.
I thought you said you weren't going to make.
What can I say? I lied.
And you get to review yourself, Reese. You can say I'm great. You know, so
yes.
So. Thanks everyone for listening, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.